Welcome back to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Hani Holzer.
And we're here to talk about active parenting. Today, our topic is allowing your children to grow. Now, as parents, we always want what's best for our children. We're concerned and we worry about them. We want to protect our children.
That's a natural inclination, is to protect our children.
Right. We want to protect them from the variety of dangers that are out there.
Well, I think it's also just from the minute they're born, we're monitoring everything that goes in them and that comes out of them. And sometimes that whole monitoring system and that kind of hovering position, especially when it's your first child, you kind of stay with that and forget when to let go of it a little bit more.
And I guess what we want to talk about today is the role of a parent as a constantly changing role, as a role that changes as your child grows, and that a parent can't have the same approach of protecting and involvement with a 2-year-old as they have with a 8-year-old or a 15-year-old. Because naturally, in trying to protect our kids, we're worried about the physical dangers. We're worried, you know, when you have a 2-year-old, you're worried what they're going to, you know, they're going to touch the electric socket or, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I just remember running around after 2-year-olds and kind of always watching where the proverbial Curious George would end up and what they'd be pulling apart and whether what they were pulling apart was really okay or if it was really dangerous.
Right. And the bottom line is you can't always protect your kids 100% of the time. I remember with our oldest when she was a toddler, you know, she was just toddling around and then she slipped and fell and hit her head right on the ledge and, you know, got a cut right between the eyes.
She has a cute little scar from that experience.
Which was very traumatic for us, though she really, you know, survived it okay. It was certainly very traumatic at the time. But the bottom line is we can't always protect our kids from everything, no matter how much we try to watch them.
Right. And actually, I think the point that we're going to get to, so I'm going to jump a little bit to the end, you know, to give you the previews, is that really we don't even want to protect them all the time because developmentally speaking, it becomes counterproductive to their own growth.
So that, you know, I could be worried about physical harm to my kid and say, okay, so you can't play, you know, ice hockey and you can't go skiing. And then, you know, I don't want you playing basketball or baseball either because you could get hit by the ball.
Right. Well, I just want to interject with, you know, some personal vignettes from my own childhood growing up in a very overprotective Eastern European home where just leaving the house in the morning seemed like the implicit message that I got was that it was dangerous to leave the house because instead of, you know, getting a goodbye, I love you, have a good day in the morning, it was be careful. I left every morning of my life with the words, be careful. I really wasn't sure what I was supposed to be careful from, but just telling me that I should be careful meant that there were dangers lurking outside from my apartment door to the bus stop, which was around the corner. So I was always careful.
If we're overly worried, we give that message to our children and we teach them worry. You know, worry is one of the things that, you know, there's a certain predisposition we all have. Some people are naturally more nervous or anxious than others. But a lot of it is really learned, and a lot of it can be unlearned as well. And so the messages we give are very important.
Well, I also think, you know, a lot of the things that we've talked about, you know, previously is that we have to check in with ourselves first as we're parenting and see where our own level of comfort or our own level of approach is in any particular area. So when it comes to worrying or what your own growing up experience was around needing to be very protective of the people in your life, you kind of have to understand a little bit more objectively of what you grew up with and how that affected you and your mindset and the way you want to approach your parenting.
Yes, I think that it's, you know, the whole point here is our ability to use proper judgment in each situation with each child, figuring out what's appropriate for that child, what's age appropriate, based upon, you know, the danger that it really does or doesn't exist and what their level of distress might be in a given situation. But not just based upon our level of anxiety and being able to look at ourselves more objectively and say, Do I really have to be worried about that? You know, if my kids are going out with their friends on a Motzei Shabbos, do I have to be worried about, where they're going to be and what they're going to do and, they're going to be safe? If they're with a group of teenagers, maybe I really don't have to be worried about their safety. I might be worried about, who they're hanging out with or, if there's some mischief makers there. So it brings us the other issues that we also, besides the physical, we're concerned about the emotional. You know, there are certain things that, we can and certain things we can't control. You know, I can't always control the friendships and the relationships my kids have. But have sometimes you have to be very concerned of kids being bullied in school. Sometimes you need to get involved.
Right. That's absolutely true. But you have to kind of understand what the difference is, because within every experience of pain, whether it's emotional or physical, to a lesser degree, there's always something to be learned, something that child can learn from that experience. Because, when you're locked out of a relationship in school, let's just say you're odd man out and you're not included in the group, life is going to be like that sometimes. And what do you do with that? How do you move on from that? What skills do you develop to become someone who can face pain and discomfort or being unhappy and then moving on?
Right. We grow from dealing with the pain or the discomfort and learning to manage our own feelings and manage the situation and move forward. And so these are really can often be growth experiences. So, for example, you have a kid who's nervous about going to sleepaway camp the first time. Right. So, they have a stomach ache the night before. They're feeling nauseous. Some maybe they even threw up.
They can't sleep. But I think reassuring a child who's having those kinds of symptoms the night before their first bus ride to camp and telling them and what they're experiencing is relatively normal considering what's going on.
And giving them the message that you're confident that they can accomplish this goal, that they can do it, as opposed to you're showing a lot of anxiety and worry about it and what's going to be if they get too sad. Well, if you're too upset, if you're too sad, we'll call us and we'll come, giving them.
You have to check your own anxiety at the door.
Right. Giving them too many worrisome options. Right? Really will increase their anxiety. It's not going to help them function better. It's going to make it more difficult. So that, being given the message that you can do this, most kids are going to go. They might have a difficult first day or two, and then they'll get in the swing of things. And by the end of the first week, they're having a great time.
And I always tell, even the young children that I work with in my office for the first time that they're leaving for camp, expect to feel a little bit of discomfort. Expect to really miss home. Expect maybe not to like the food. But that will probably last a couple of days, and then you're going to be so busy and so engaged and so busy making friends and enjoying the environment that all of that's going to fade away. And it's normal to feel that discomfort initially.
Right. Now, some kids really have significant anxiety that probably should be addressed by a professional. But there are kids where they know every time they go away, they're going to feel very nervous about leaving for the first couple of days, and then they know they're going to be all right. So they've learned to overcome it. It's not the anxiety doesn't come. They've learned to manage it. But I know kids who never went to sleepaway camp because they were too anxious to leave home. Right? And then when they were finishing high school and it was time to go to Israel, they didn't want to miss that experience. They were willing to be mevater to give up the experience of sleepaway camp. They weren't willing to give up the experience of going with their friends to Israel for the year. And at that point, they came in and really needed treatment in advance of going so they could successfully make that transition.
I mean, I'm personally grateful, and I feel very understanding and compassionate of my parents and my grandmother's own anxiety and where it came from and their efforts to try to protect me from, quote, the dangers that lurk outside the family home. And I'm grateful for the fact that I could put that in perspective and not let it, maybe it limited some of my own experiences. I don't ride a bicycle. I don't swim. I don't do much. I mean, I do a lot of things, but I don't do those active kind of things where, you could always break something. But I really have encouraged, because of my own experience, my children to do everything. Swim, ski, ride your bike, become a lifeguard, be active, be part of life, because it's great and it's exciting and it's fun. Even though I have to tell you, sometimes like a little bit inside of me, I'm like a little bit worried, but that's like my business, not their business. I don't make it their business.
Now, getting back to the emotional aspects, I just want to give the flip side of, you know, there are times that parents do need to get involved. You know, if your kid is being bullied in school, right? Or your daughter is being stalked in school by somebody. You know, there's other kids with emotional problems. They can try to work it out. And if not, then it really needs to be addressed. And if the school's not addressing it, you need to go in and advocate to make sure that it gets addressed appropriately. So we're not saying there's never a time to get involved. It's just that generally parents err on the side of getting too involved too quickly, not letting kids work things out for themselves. If a kid's having a fight with his friends, he can work it out. If he wants your advice, you know, if she wants to talk to you about how to handle the situation.
Right. Well, it's about empowering your children at home to navigate those situations in life. So let's, you know, be at home talking strategies, talking about, you know, how you might approach the situation from a place of skill and empowerment. But not from a, you know, I can't handle this, so, you know, mommy or daddy have to take care of it for me because it's bigger than I am. It's very big, yes. We can acknowledge that it's very big and very uncomfortable. And yes, we're going to talk about how you might be able to manage it better.
Now, the other major area that we, I think, try to protect our kids is in the spiritual realm. You know, we send our kids to yeshivas because we want them with a certain type of kids. We get concerned if they, who their friends are. The fact is, though, is that I've seen time and time again, kids find who they're comfortable with and find kids who are, you know, who address the needs that they have. Okay. So if my kid isn't feeling very good about themselves, they're going to congregate with other kids who really aren't feeling very good about themselves.
No matter what school they go to.
Right. No matter what school. I was just talking to one, you know, very hush of a person the other day who was talking about, you know, his daughter, where he's had, you know, two or three other daughters, you know, in this Beis Yaakov, and they've done great. And this daughter, he's not happy with the friend she has there. And you know, he didn't send her the closest school. He sent her the school that he thought was the best school and really top place, which it is. But, you know, you're going to find kids who meet your criteria, and you're going to find kids who don't meet your criteria wherever you're going to go. Okay? And you can't shield your kids totally from that situation. Rather, you have to, if your child's, you know, getting involved in things that you're upset about, then you have to look at it and say, okay, how can I help my kid? Okay, if there's my kid's having a problem, let me take a step back and say, you know, just saying, no, you can't, you know, is not going to work.
How can I promote them making better choices for themselves?
Right. But the key being making better choices for themselves, not like I can go and enforce a choice behind their back.
Right. And not to, you know, superimpose and try to control the situation.
Right. Because especially as they get older, we find that we have less and less control of who our kids spend time with and what they do with their time.
Right. And I think, you know, if we give them the skills that they need to navigate all of the bumps and all of the detours in life, they'll have had those good growth experiences, and they're more likely to be empowered to make better choices for themselves as they continue to, you know, navigate the life cycle.
Right. And I think the other area is, of course, the academic, where, you know, we worry about our kids getting good grades and moving ahead and being in the right yeshiva and, you know, getting to the right college or whatever the case might be, you know, being in the better shiur or whatever it is, or in the right class. And, you know, kids are really most comfortable and do best when they're at a level that challenges them to a challenge that is doable for them. Pushing them too hard and too far to overachieve, right, generally leads to failure, okay, or frustration, or a kid who becomes very tense and anxious and feels angry and overwhelmed.
And perfectionistic.
Right. And, you know, shooting too low, right? It also leaves them feeling bored and uninterested. So finding the right place and the right level is important. But again, we can't always intervene. And sometimes when it comes to, you know, a kid wanting to change a class or wanting to make a difference, when it's appropriate for me in third or fourth grade to go and meet with the principal and say, you know, this isn't working, we have to do something, it's not necessarily appropriate for me to do it in 10th grade.
Right. And I mean, I actually appreciate that about the high schools where we've sent our children, because one thing that both schools, boys' school and the girls' school, made very clear is that if there is some sort of issue, particularly academic or even social, they really want the child in high school to come and get comfortable advocating for themselves and approaching the faculty.
Right. And sometimes you just have to live with a situation that's not great. Sometimes you really don't thrill, you're not thrilled with the teacher, or the class is really hard, and you really got to work harder to manage.
Or if you're bored in the class, sometimes you really just have to manage your boredom and be okay being there also. And that's a skill that you need also in life.
Right. So that you can't, you know, they're not, school's never going to be perfect in all classes in all ways. You certainly want them to have, you know, ideally a good Rebbe every year, a good, you know, the main teacher should really be good.
What we all should be looking for is an optimal situation, not a perfect situation. Because I don't know anybody's life that's perfect. Optimal is as bad as good as it gets, and that's what we're really looking for, is teaching how to find optimal and how to live with optimal, even though it's not, quote, perfect.
Basically, to sort of reiterate, I think, the steps we're talking about, ideally what you want to do is encourage kids to solve their problems on their own, whether it be your, you know, 8-year-old who has a fight with his friend, okay, whether it's, you know, your 12-year-old who's, you know, is nervous about going on a sleepover, or it's your, you know, high school age kid.
And the truth is, what we're talking about, I think, you know, from my perspective and my experience, for parents, is one of the hardest things to do is to be able to sit and not try to fix or change your child's pain, but to really sit with it and honor it.
Right. So that when your kid comes to you with the problem, right, you just being able to listen, okay, and not necessarily tell them what to do and let them figure it out on their own is really the, you know, the I think the ideal way to manage most situations.
Well, even, right, not to solve it for them, but you could be, you know, parents should be or could be, depending on the age level, part of the process that helps the child move forward in their problem-solving skills.
Right, because sometimes kids will come home and just by talking about it with you and you're listening, you know, they'll figure out the solution on their own. And sometimes they'll really need your advice and your help, and you need to sort of point them in the right direction and, you know, give suggestions, discuss it, reflect back with them, help them choose. You know, you don't have to choose for them, but you can help them choose
what to do or
how to handle it.
These are your options. There's option A, there's option B, and there's option C. And you can kind of figure out what option might work to your best advantage. But even that process of coming up with the options is so important, because that's an enormous life skill right there, is being able to cull options and know that there are options and you're not necessarily boxed in and helpless in this situation.
Because by doing that, you give them the feeling of competence and you give them the responsibility to solve their own issues. So they have to go back now and follow through on this plan that they now came up with that they feel good about.
And this is also, I think, an area where, you know, the parent pair, mother and father, could be so helpful to each other, because getting back to how hard it is to sit with your own discomfort of sitting with your child's discomfort and being able to turn to your partner, to your spouse, and say, wow, it was really hard to sit with Moshe's, you know, problem in school today, but I listened to him and, you know, we kind of worked it through a little bit and we came up with some ideas. And your spouse being able to encourage you and say, wow, I can't even imagine having to do that, and you did it so well. Being able to partner together so that you can parent better and give your kids more room and space to grow?
Well, I think especially for men, this is difficult because men tend to be much more solution oriented. Okay, tell me the problem. I figured out the problem. Here's your solution. Go. Women tend to be more process oriented. Okay, let me listen. And very often, you know, many men have to learn when they get married that when their wife's coming to them with a problem, it's not because they don't know the solution. It's because they want to talk. And they just need to talk it out. And you need to take that skill and help your children with that skill as well.
Right. Exactly. And I think also the parents really being able to create that empathy for each other and that compassion for each other that, wow, this parenting thing is really hard. I always like giggle a little bit when, you know, I'm working with parents and they'll say, well, this parenting thing is really a lot of work. It comes as a great surprise. I'm not sure why, but it just sometimes just seems to come as a great surprise at how much work goes into parenting.
Right. Because you really need a knowledge of what's appropriate for each kid and what they can and can't do. I mean, sometimes you have to get involved. Your kid's got this science project and he's got to build these bridges and somebody's got to cut the wood. Okay. So, you know, yes, it's okay to cut the wood for him if he's in, you know, maybe if he's in fifth or sixth grade and really you don't want him using the electric saw himself. And sometimes you can sort of do it together and supervise it and give him, you know, trust me, it'd be, you know, your son might be very happy if you let him cut the wood and, you know, play with the tools. But certain parts of things, you know, certainly need some direct assistance. But you want to use that in the ways that it's going to be least intrusive, that they're not going to be made to feel like I can't do it. And that's what we really want to avoid. I want to give the message to my kid, you need my help. You can't do it on your own.
Right. I mean, part of what I do in my office, just even with the young adults that I work with, I'm talking about young men and young women in their 20s, is just giving them the message and the insight into themselves to see that they, yes, you can do it. Whatever it is, you know, whatever decisions you're coming up in life, if we can do that for our kids at developmentally appropriate stages, well, when they're 20s, they'll know that they can do it because they've been told and it's been practiced and it's been internalized as part and parcel of who they are, that, yes, I can do this.
The key is, as long as we're not doing it for them, okay, and we're not interfering in the process, I think they learn these skills.
I mean, let's go back to the example of when a child falls off, you know, a small child falls, you know, from the sliding pond. And depending on how the parent reacts, truthfully is how the child's going to react to some degree also. If the parent gets all upset and, you know, looks very frightened and anxious and responds quickly towards, you know, moves towards the child quickly with, you know, worry and, you know, excitement, the child is going to get very agitated and excited and react accordingly. If the parent can approach the child slowly, compassionately, lovingly and say, okay, you fell, let's give the boo-boo a kiss and now you can go back and play, the child's going to be calmer in their response to their own pain as well.
Right. I think Dr. Wendy Mogul makes this point in her book, The Blessing of a Skinned Knee. She's actually an interesting person. She's a Balas Tshuva, a psychologist who came back to, you know, who grew up in a secular home and was looking for something that she felt was missing in her practice. And she talks about this, you know, about teaching your child not to panic over pain. And we know that kids' reaction to pain or to getting hurt really depends as a reflection of how their parents react. If the parent is very matter of fact and calm about things, the kid just goes on playing, you know, and they, you know, really rebound very quickly. And the parent gets all, you know, out of sorts and starts crying and, you know, gets all, you know, worried. Then the kid starts crying and becomes inconsolable and, you know, it really destroys the day.
Right. Children really take their cues from their parents, and what's modeled for them in response to any situation is what they're going to internalize and incorporate, and it will be how they respond to.
Right. Some other points, by the way, that she makes is the idea of letting your kids experience the world. Okay. Meaning that there are a lot of things in the world that we try to protect our kids from. We live in a nice neighborhood with nice middle class people and values. They don't necessarily see poor people. They don't necessarily see people with disabilities. And exposing them, you know, taking them to a soup kitchen on Thanksgiving and serving people who really are poor and don't have a lot less, exposing them to, you know, I mean, there are kids who
People with disabilities.
There are people who work on, you know, kids who work in the summer in camps for people with disabilities or for kids with cancer or other serious issues. And that really develops the concept of gemilas chesed in your child. When they give them the chance to really practice gemilas chesed,
It
grows.
And it's not only gemilas chesed, but it's a capacity and real understanding and belief in themselves that they can function anywhere, that they can take care of somebody else who might need care, and they're capable of doing that.
I think it enhances their appreciation for what they have. Right? And gives them a sense of responsibility for the fact that we're responsible for others as well. It's not just about me. Also, it's, you know, not to be, you know, overcome by the emotional stress, you know. If your kid's having some problem, if you stay calm, they'll stay calm. The key being here that we want to raise our children to be more independent, more self-sufficient.
And more confident in their abilities to manage and handle situations that will invariably come up in their lives. We can protect them from life and from the situations that life will bring to their doorsteps.
If children don't experience stress, they never grow. They never get stronger. Okay? Just as we have to stress our muscles, you know, we have to exercise them in order for them to go stronger. Our children need these experiences in order for them to grow stronger and to become more independent and be able to grow and do more on their own.
And I think if, you know, we kind of have the mindset that discomfort is really more of an opportunity for self-learning and self-growth, then that really changes the way we respond to discomfort in ourselves and in our children.
Right. So, I guess going back to the message here is that we need to be able to use our good judgment and not a judgment based on our own anxiety, but a judgment based on sort of a collective. As you might say, the minhag ha'makom. You know, if every other 13-year-old is able to stay home alone or babysit for their siblings, then our kid probably can do it too, unless they're exceedingly immature.
I mean, when our youngest asked us when she could cross the main street in our town, and I said, when she's 30, that wasn't a good response.
Not if she took it seriously.
Oh, okay.
But the fact is we do at times, all of us, overprotect. And our job is to really make sure our kids have enough experiences on a daily basis where they really can grow and that they're constantly, you know, moving forward, moving in the right direction.
Right. I think, you know, if we allow them to experience those mini challenges, like when do you get to cross the big street? When do you get to stay home by yourself? When do you get to walk to your friend's house that's 5 blocks away by yourself? And we allow them to have a success in those mini challenges, then that's also part of the growth process that we want to see in them.
I think given these guidelines about recognizing the dangers, putting them in perspective based on our child's age, using our best judgment based on how distressed the child would be by it, based on what's age appropriate and how big the risks really are, and then really working with them to let them solve it on their own or guide them, listen to them, and help them figure out solutions so that, you know, our assistance that we have to offer remains limited and that they can really learn to do things more on their own. They will continue to grow, okay? And that's really what we want, is the idea of pulling ourselves back, okay, and allowing them to grow. It's just like the concepts of Tzimtzum, that initially God encompassed everywhere and there was no room for man. And God had to pull back and contract to make space for man to exist. we constantly have to do that and pull back, and makes more and more space for this child to grow and to exist as an independent individual.
And to become a competent, confident adult.
Well, we hope this was helpful to you. Thank you for tuning in to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. And if you have any questions or comments, please send them to parentisaverb@ou.org. Thank you, and have a good day.